I think there's a variety within the schools. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that, I don't know in specific, but Geshe Jamspel, the Ladakhi Geshe, who I worked with a lot over the years, he was a Kachen actually from Tashilumbo rather than a Geshe, but we call him Geshe also. And he has the Kachen degree from Tashilumbo, it's like a Geshe degree. And he always used to say that even within the Gelugpa school, that at different points in its history, different scholars had sort of revelatory experiences, you know, of Buddha nature, you could say, that they, or Buddha essence or Buddha element, that they interpreted in a Shentong manner, and then they were criticized within the Gelugpa school. So I think it's better to realize that these schools have pluralistic, you know, arguments within themselves. It isn't like one school versus another. Then it can descend into a tedious sort of sectarian thing that is not a good idea. And I think there's this diversity. And basically, I believe that, for example, Dzongkhapa, who and Gyaltsep, who wrote the commentary of the Nuttara Yoga there, and I think he wrote that based on Tsongkhapa's teaching about the idea of the Deshek Ningbo, to try to give a cataphatic vision without going to the Shendong direction logically, because of his, you know, Tsongkhapa's very much was into trying to bring together the logic and the Madhyamaka. And he, that was his special job, according to the instructions he received from Manjushri, was to pay more attention to conventional reality. And so he didn't want anybody jumping off into sort of deep faith before they had used logic for in the sheer negation in the, you know, prasajja pratisheda, the megak of voidness, of emptiness, where they really hit clear light and they surrendered in a way to reality. Any conceptual idea that they knew what reality is in some conceptual way, that conceptuality could describe the inconceivable, he didn't like that. So he critiqued it. But they appreciate the cataphatic approach, which is the approach of seeing, you know, Buddha as greater than God, if you will. You know, if you read Pundarika's verses in the Vimala Prabha, the stainless light commentary of the Kalachakra, abbreviated Kalachakra Tantra, which is the one we have, Kalachakra is presented as practically the creator of everything. It's unbelievably theistic, actually. It's amazing. You could easily see how someone would really feel Kalachakra is everything, you know, and Mrs. Kalachakra, my goodness. Vishwamata, the Natsok Yum, what I call the multifarious mother. She has no atoms. She is pure energy, like chain reaction nuclear fission energy without atoms, and yet more powerful than any atomic form. And so talk about creative. On the other hand, they always want to not be responsible for creating suffering. You know, the theodicy problem in Western, in theistic, monotheistic religions is always an inescapable problem, where if there is an absolute force that creates the world, it has to be responsible for suffering and evil. And then faith cannot be complete, because there will be a subconscious suspicion. If God is omnipotent and God is omnicompassionate, what happened to me? People will not be able to avoid that, and the theodicy problem will not be solvable. So the Buddha gets out of that by going to the very brink of sort of infinite creativity, of clear light, And yet clear light doesn't do anything. And in a way, we can understand that. If you think of clear light, the way I like to think of it is, clear light is an infinite energy. But think about an infinite energy. Like this is more power, like the Vajrayogini stands on a solar disk, which is not just a solar disk. That's million degrees Kelvin or whatever they call scientists, very high temperature. And but this is the intensity of a supernova, a Dume, Kalagni, Dume, the end of the world, you know, a supernova energy. She just stands on it like it's a little disc, like a pillow for her. And that's a symbol that the mind, free of atoms, if you will, the energy level below atoms is unlimited. But an unlimited energy, infinite energy, will not do anything on its own initiative. It doesn't have initiative. Why? Because everything is already done from the point of view of infinite energy. There's nothing to be done. So therefore, people can draw themselves from the well of infinite energy, people who need to do something, but some being that needs to do something. And maybe Buddha's compassion needs to help beings so they can shape forms like Nirmanakayas out of this infinite energy, as many as they want. Infinite number of saviors they can send out. That's Shenesik, you know, Dharma. But the point is that the infinite energy itself doesn't do anything. So this is the same thing you have, the idea of Lundrup, Klunjitrupa, of Buddha's Finle as being effortless and spontaneous and et cetera, et cetera. In other words, not an effort. Anabhisamskara, you know, Dumache. So in that area, as the great, what was his name? Dagchen Rinpoche, not Dagchen Rinpoche, the other one who lived in Seattle, the great Sakyapa. And someone asked him about older Shentong and Rangtong. He said, his answer was, what's his name? Wonderful Lama.
Oh, Dezhung Rinpoche.
Dezhung Rinpoche.
Dezhung, that's right, Dezhung Rinpoche. He said, oh, what do I think about it? Here's what I think about it. Shentong la jiao su xiu, Rangtong la jiao su xiu. And I like to think that's my attitude as well. And that's, yeah, I think that's Jaya Rinpoche's attitude, because he defended Kalachakra. You have to remember, his Sakya teacher, Rendawa, said he was nervous about Kalachakra. What is this Tong Suk? We don't like Tong Suk. You know, we're not empty void body or void image or void, you know, no atoms body. We're not worried about that, et cetera. He had 14 different points he worried about Kalachakra. And Jaya Rinpoche loved Kalachakra. And he respects Kalachakra lineage from Jonang. But he doesn't agree philosophically about on the sort of regular level of reasoning. He wants to be this idea that the absolute can have qualities, he can't deal with that. So, but he respects completely. He also shows to the feeling of the complete immanence of the absolute love with the shunyata karana garbham, voidness, the womb of compassion. And you know, this relates to one thing. I just want to say one thing about it. I'm going off on my own agendas, but never mind. And that is this. There are some people nowadays who have been studying with the scientists about compassion. And then they're into this thing that compassion and empathy are different. And I'm sure their own compassion and empathy are different, because this is not yet Buddha's compassion. But Buddha's compassion is complete empathy. It is not a withdrawal from empathy and then you bring up some other ingredient. Although in a way there is another ingredient which we would call bliss. Bliss, great bliss, is so powerful that you can be fully empathetic at the same time without losing the bliss, which is inconceivable. So I've said that and it doesn't mean anything. I don't pretend that, I just said it all. But I'm pushing it to the point of where we realize that what a Buddha is, why he's inconceivable. He's melted into Dechen, orgasmic bliss, embracing the entire universe, like which is what Mahamudra, the whole universe is his consort, if you will, you know. And I use orgasmic instead of that euphemistic Snellgrovian innate lenje. This is pomo lenje, so I'm saying that. And that's so powerful that therefore when he feels Bob Thurman's or your suffering, my suffering, Rinpoche's suffering, Marcus's suffering, he fully feels it the way we feel it. And he can do it without losing bliss, but yet he also fully feels it. And that's why can help us, because he knows, he's like the doctor CAT scan who knows exactly what your sickness is. What is your klesha? Because he feels it, he experiences your klesha. So he knows what you need as an antidote to your klesha perfectly. And the bliss enables him. And it's like you and me sometimes, if we're really in the flow, we're jogging, we're like freaking out, or we're in love or whatever it is. And then we bump our foot or stub our toe. Somehow, well, toe, we will don't feel it, but we know it happened, but we don't really get into it being painful. And then later, then it's ow, you know. But it's possible to feel two things at once, in other words. And this is the extreme of that. The extreme of that means inconceivability of that. So we can't settle Shen Tong, Rang Tong. You can't settle either one. So therefore, Jiaozi showed to both of them. One of them just means you go all the way to give up your selfishness. And the other, and you feel everything of everybody. You open yourself to everything. And the other one is you're really happy. You're so happy it's absolute. So you can say, oh, the absolute is happy. You can say, no matter what.